Good Sunday morning. It is indeed Your Money on this Sunday morning. No Bruce Helmer today, but we do have Peg Webb and a very special guest. If you have a question for Peg or Ryan, he will be introduced here in just a moment, but you can call our number 651-461-9226. If you ever have any questions for Wealth Enhancement Group, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE, or you can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. And without further ado, here is Wealth Enhancement Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. Good morning, Peg.
Good morning, everybody. Bruce is indeed off today and well-deserved. But today, it's our monthly what's called the Open Lines show, meaning that everybody who's listening can participate with the show for the entire time. But what I did was, instead of doing the show myself, I went back to one of my favorite advisors within Wealth Enhancement Group that we have worked together for decades, is Ryan McEwen. And many of you are going to recognize him if you're a frequent listener to the show. He's a senior vice president and financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement. He helps lead the tax strategies group for our roundtable and has extensive tax and retirement income planning. Actually, I don't know that he doesn't know anything. He knows anything and everything, so it's really fun to have him on the show today. He also is a longstanding member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisory Group. This is a big deal. It's a leading national group. It's an organization that's dedicated to advanced retirement planning. So he's so instrumental on our roundtable. He gets all sorts of awards, Twin Cities Business Magazine and Forbes Best in State several times. But then his credentials, he's a CPA and a certified financial planner. And well, welcome back to the program, Ryan. It's so great to have you on with me today.
It is great to be on, but, you know, Peg, you said we've worked together for decades. Are you saying we're getting older?
Well, I know that the listeners know that Bruce and I have been here for, well, it's actually, yeah, decades. And what a fun ride it's been. What a fun job to help all these people. So thank you, Ryan, for coming on today. You know, last week, Bruce and I did the show on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and Ryan was actually quoted that same week in the Wall Street Journal recently regarding Roth conversion. So we absolutely want people to call in today because I've got this person, Ryan, who I call him a walking encyclopedia. Do you remember that, Ryan? I call you a walking encyclopedia.
And that makes me sound even older, Peg.
Well, that's true. That's true. I'm actually giving my age. But, you know, we had this question on the Roth IRAs, but I'd love to have people call in and start lining up now because we'd like to take as many questions, 651-461-9226. So, Ryan, the Trump administration just passed a massive domestic spending bill, which Bruce and I talked about last week, but not in to the depth of the provisions that affect Roth conversions, like retirement savings. Like, should people actually be converting their taxable IRAs to Roth?
Yeah, I think it's the tax bill that just passed in July, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, that has been in the news quite a bit, doesn't change Roth conversions itself. What it changes is the factors that you want to consider in should you convert or not convert. And yeah, I think in my Wall Street Journal article that I was quoted, it said something to the extent that they didn't make it any easier for us to help make this decision because it wasn't easy before. And it takes a lot of thorough analysis to make sure whether or not it's a right move for your situation or not.
And is that because of some of the new things in the bill?
Well, there is. There's some nuances, and I think this is going to impact people's taxes in general. One of the things that I think is going to impact people, and this could apply to Roth conversion planning. It could apply to this general tax planning, is that you're going to be able to write off up to $40,000 of state and local taxes. And that includes your state income taxes, your real estate taxes, your vehicle registration that you pay when you renew your vehicle licenses. And that's a big thing, especially, you know, we're in Minnesota and we do pay some taxes. And we've been, since the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017 passed, we've only been limited to $10,000 of those types of deductions on our taxes, which means we're not getting benefit for anything above that. Now that this limit is going up to $40,000, there's going to be a lot of people that are getting a lot more tax deductions this year. And the more tax deductions you have, the more favorable a Roth IRA conversion from an IRA to a Roth IRA is, because you'll have more deductions to offset the income. When this law passed back in 2017 that limited us to only $10,000, that took away the ability to have as many deductions that could help shelter some of the income that you might have to pay taxes on if you performed a conversion, if you performed a conversion from 2018 until, well, this year, because we've got $40,000 you can write off. I'm looking forward to that, Peg. I don't know about you.
Yeah, we in our analysis with clients, we do look at what their tax brackets are. Is there a kind of a sweet spot?
There is a sweet spot, and usually you don't want to look at this just on a one-year basis. You want to do a long-term financial projection showing what the trajectory of your income is going to be over time. For instance, when you're age 73, or potentially age 75 if you were born in 1960 or later, you want to look to see what are the required minimum distributions that you might face from your tax-deferred accounts at that time. By converting to IRA to Roth IRA before those ages, that will help reduce the amount that is subject to those required distributions later, and possibly putting you into a higher tax bracket. The thing we want to look at when we do an analysis like that is, are those required distributions actually going to put you in a higher tax bracket? Maybe you have Roth IRAs and money that's not in tax deferred accounts already that won't make these required distributions as big of a deal. And, you know, the concern of putting you in a higher tax bracket isn't as impactful. But a lot of clients that I know, Peg, you probably see this, they have a lot in tax deferred accounts. And when we run these projections, they're going to be in a higher tax bracket than what they're in right now. And you and I have conversations with clients, why don't we take some of those dollars and pay the taxes now at the rate that is lower, instead of wait until we pay taxes later at a higher rate? And with these new tax laws that just got passed where we can deduct more state taxes, that allows us to convert more of your tax deferred dollars to Roth IRAs without going into higher tax brackets. Kind of, you know, playing this game of hot potato. We want to pay taxes now at a lower rate to avoid paying taxes later at a higher rate. But you've got to do the numbers.
I think the general feeling for people is they want to pay the least tax possible every single year. But the problem with that, as you address, is it's kind of like a snowball coming down a mountain. Because if you deferred all these IRA dollars, and it just becomes a bigger and bigger and larger, you know, snowball coming down the hill, that at one day, somebody, whether it's you during your lifetime, and we know we have to do required minimum distributions during our lifetime, but if those that huge bucket of IRAs that are taxable goes to the next generation, that's going to be taxed too. So one day you have to pay the piper. And I loved your article because you're at least explaining to people now, like with the changes, it certainly is a time to review whether this is the time to do some conversions, or literally you could just take IRA money out and pay the taxes and put it in your savings or reinvest it otherwise. Ryan?
And Peg, I really like how you just mentioned next generation, because this is a topic I bring up, and I know you bring up too, as well as many, you know, our other advisors at Wealth Enhancement, is what's the next generation's tax rate going to look like? If you don't pay the taxes, your beneficiaries, if they're, unless they're charities, they're going to pay taxes on this. In doing this analysis, I don't know about you, Peg, but I think people should really be thinking about what are the tax rates of the kids. A lot of our clients' children are doing very well, and I don't want, we don't want to see that tax bill kicked down to them at an even worse rate.
Right. Hey, Denny, let's get listeners involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an easy way to do it. You can call or text 65, well, right now, in fact, during the show, 651-461-9226. Again, call or text 651-461-9226. Oh, we have a call. Okay, good to hear. Susie's calling in from Rogers. Susie, thanks for calling. What is your question?
Good morning. Yes, I have a 19-year-old son who graduated high school, started out going to a technical college, and was using some of his money from the 529 plan. Ended up getting a good job opportunity with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, actually. So he is no longer attending college, and he's working. So he has, quite a bit of money left in that college fund. And I have heard that they can convert or transfer $30,000 from a 529 over to a Roth IRA. He already has a Roth IRA set up. So my question is, when he does that, will he have to transfer the $30,000 in increments, like for his maximum contribution each year, or can he do it all at once?
Well, thank you, Susie, for just defining all that for us. This sounds like a Ryan answer that we need.
I'm excited to answer this question because this is actually going to address a relatively new part of the tax law, not part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, but it's part of the Secure Act 2.0 that passed a couple of years ago. And so, Susie, you should be very proud of your son for getting that that tech job. I think all of us as parents, we all hope to have a similar story as you do over the long term, and have some, be able to brag about how well our kids are doing. But in relation to 529 accounts, there is a provision that allows for unused 529 balances, money that's not getting used for education or anything else, to be able to be transferred to Roth IRA. And there's a few stipulations that you need to be aware of to make this happen correctly in a tax-free manner. The first is that it needs to be open for 15 years. So if you haven't hit that 15-year mark yet, you will want to make sure that you wait till 15 years. Second is that you can only do the annual contribution amount every year. So you do have to do it in increments. You can't do it all at once. And when your son transfers to that Roth IRA from the 529 plan, that reduces his ability to make his own Roth IRA contribution for that year. You can't double dip and have two contributions, one from a 529 plan and one from an individual, go in. So that's another stipulation. And the lifetime maximum is $35,000 on the ability to transfer from 529 to Roth IRA right now. So I think it's a really good provision. I think it encourages people to save more now for college education. And you should look at it as college funds first, but then it's nice to know that if you don't use it, that there is these other opportunities to help your kids get started off financially in a really great manner by being able to transfer to Roth. Peg, do you have anything to add?
You did such an excellent job, and we've got so many other callers and texters. I'd love to get to some of them. Denny?
Absolutely. Again, 651-461-9226. That worked for a phone call or a text. One that came in earlier, Peg and Ryan, please explain indexed annuities.
Ryan?
All right. So an index annuity. So annuities come in all different shapes and sizes. There's variable, there's fixed, and a variable, you have full exposure to the stock market. You're taking risk. And you have a product called a fixed annuity, where you just are going to get a fixed rate of return for a certain number of years. And that's not, there's no risk of principal other than, you know, making sure the insurance company is solvent and you know exactly what you're going to get. A fixed index annuity is a combination of those items. You get a return that's based on a stock market index like the S&P 500 that's usually limited. You don't get complete upside like you would in a variable annuity where you're taking more risk. But one of the nice things about a fixed index annuity is that when the stock market index that you're invested in is down, you don't see your account go down. So you don't get the up, you don't get all the upside, but then you take out the downside that you might be trying to avoid.
Oh, yes. I'll add a little bit here, too. I think what's happened with index annuities is they're a little bit complex, right? And so, you know, understanding all the features and benefits along with the what ifs is a good idea. And hopefully if you're working with an advisor, they'll explain that all to you. In a lot of cases as well, you have to hold that index annuity for some time. And in some cases, it could be 7 years of time. And what I mean is if you decide, I don't want this anymore, then if you cash it out, there'll be a penalty. What some clients do that I've witnessed is they may just turn it on for some income during that time period where you may have a penalty to get out. But so my opinion is make sure you understand them, because people who come in to see us tend to not really understand the ins and outs of the annuity. So my recommendation is to take some time and make sure that you understand. Danny?
We have about 2 minutes before the break. Let me pose this question and see how much we could fill until, and we could always jump in later. Could you speak to what types of assets qualify for step-up in basis and what assets do not?
You want to start that, Ryan? Right. We may not be able to get through, but maybe start it and then come on the backside.
Yeah, in generally speaking, what a step-up in basis is for assets that are not in retirement accounts, that are not in annuities, that are not in irrevocable trust, typically the basis increases from what the owner of that asset paid for it during their life to what the fair market value of that asset is at death. And that decreases the amount of capital gain that the people who inherit those assets have to pay when they sell the asset, because they only have to pay on the difference between what the value was at the date of death and what they sell it for. And so great examples of this would be real estate, farmland, a commercial real estate, a house, stocks and bonds that have been owned inside a non-retirement account. Those are really common assets that you can leave to people and get a step up in basis, giving very, very, very favorable tax treatment upon death for your heirs.
Very good.
So we could maybe, yeah, Denny, let's take it and then maybe do a little bit more on the back.
Sure. We'll come back with more information on the other side right after the break. In the meantime, let me give you the phone number. It also happens to be the text number, and that is 651-461-9226. Texts are coming in. If you'd like to make it a phone call, by all means. Same number, 651-461-9226. Down the road, you can always send an email question to yourmoney@wealthandhaspa.com. Back on the other side with more of Your Money. If you have a financial question, you can call this number 24/7, keep in mind, 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, and we urge you to do so, you can call or text our studio line right now, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Once again this morning, here is Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. Peg?
Yes, we're having an open line show, and it's actually my favorite show. We do it every month. Bruce is out today, so I kind of recruited Ryan McEwen to come in, and you can probably already hear that he is a very specialized, knows a lot. I call him the walking encyclopedia, but he's a senior vice president and financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement. He leads the tax strategies group. He's with this longstanding, he's a longstanding member of this Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group. He does a lot for Wealth Enhancement Group as being on the round table. I mean, if I need something, Ryan's always the first person that I think of to go to since we've worked together for so long. He's a CPA, certified financial planner. Welcome back to the program, Ryan. I thought maybe just maybe close that stepped up basis question with maybe an example.
Yeah, I was thinking about that over the break too, how that would be really helpful. And the example I thought of is that, let's say your mom or dad paid $10 for a stock now, and then they died, and it was worth $100 at the time of their death. And this stock was in a non-retirement account, can't be in a retirement account for this to get this tax benefit. That gets a step up in basis, meaning the basis or what determines how much taxable gain you have to pay when you sell a stock outside of a retirement account. Their basis is based off not the $10 that mom and dad paid for it, but the $100 that it was worth at the time of their death. Now, let's say the stock keeps going up after the kids inherit it. Let's say they sell it for $110. They only have to pay tax on the difference between the $100 that the stock was worth at the time they inherited it from their parents to what they sold it for $110. So just $10. They don't have to pay tax on the difference between what their parents bought it for at $10 and what they sold it for at $110. So that saves them, the step up in basis saves the beneficiaries of this stock close to taxes on $90 per share in capital gain. And you can apply this to houses, and real estate is a big thing that we see when people inherit houses and so forth. Really, really strong tax benefit in the code. Peg?
Good. Hey, Denny, let's get as many listeners involved as we can.
Sure we can. We're getting callers and texters. 651-461-9226. Speaking of phone calls, Lewis calling in from St. Cloud, Minnesota today. Lewis, what is your question?
I am going to earn over the $133,000, the IRMA bracket. I'm paying more for Medicare, about 40%, but I'm going to be getting close to the next level, the 100%. I think it's in the $160,000. Do you know any idea what that next bracket would be? I'll try to stay under that.
Well, Lewis, this is a great question. So what Lewis is referring to for listeners is something called IRMA. It's an income-related surcharge on your Medicare Part B and D premiums. And so Lewis is referred to $133,000 as the limit that he's at. And Lewis must be single, because that is the second tier of surcharges for a single person. They start at $106,000 of income for a single person and $212,000 for a joint person. Lewis is concerned, hey, my income's already above this level, but there are several tiers of these surcharges. The next level of surcharge for Lewis is $167,000. So it goes from 106 to 133 to 167 and so on. That surcharge keeps getting worse and worse as Lewis's income goes up. So hopefully, Lewis, well, I'd be happy if your income went up, but I don't want it to go up so much you pay a lot more in your Medicare premiums. The really catchy part with these IRMA surcharges, as they call them, is that if you go $1 over these thresholds, so if Lewis goes $1 over $167,000 and has $167,001 of income, his Medicare premiums bump up by way more than a dollar. And so when you're doing tax planning, we talked about Roth conversions earlier. A Roth conversion is something that can trigger more income and potentially put you in a surcharge situation. So that's something to be aware of. The other thing that Lewis needs to think about too is these surcharges at $133,000 level, that's based off of 2023 income. There's a lag effect where you pay a higher Medicare premium based off your 2 years prior income. So for 2026, those premiums are going to be based off of 2024 income. So for Lewis and other listeners, if you're looking ahead to 2026 and thinking about what your income should be in 2025, well, the 2025 income is going to impact 2027 income-related surcharges for Medicare, whether you pay them or not. You want to look at your 2024 income to determine what your 2026 surcharges might be. But those income levels go up every year just by a little bit. So the numbers that I just referred to, $133,000 in instance for Lewis's situation, that number is going to be a little bit higher for 2026 Medicare premiums based on 2024 income. Boy, that was a mouthful.
It is. And here's what happens. Because of this 2 year, behind, and when the clients come in and they get the letter in the mail, comes from Social Security in January, they come to me and a lot of advisors and say, "What in the world happened?" Because that was 2 years ago. So then we have to explain why we did these tax strategies way back when and why that increased your Medicare costs for that 1 year. And just so you know, it's 1 year. So then it'll change. But it is something that you should take into consideration when you're thinking about how much tax you want to pay before you might go sell, a stock that has a very low basis and all of a sudden you have all these capital gains. So just keep an eye on it. Denny?
Yes, let's take another phone call and we'll pick up on some text messages. Bert, next up here on Your Money. Bert, what is your question?
Yes, living in Minnesota, can I make a college contribution to my nephew's kids in California? And would I be taxed by taking out that money? And how much can I give them?
Well, Bert, so that's a good question. So if you're a Minnesota resident, what I'm going to read between the lines and make a little assumption. You're wanting to make a contribution to a 529 education account for those kids. And if you're a Minnesota resident, there's two potential tax benefits that you can get for putting money into a 529 plan for anybody's kids. They could be your nieces, nephews, aunts, anybody, even for yourself, if you want to get this tax benefit. If your income is low enough, you can qualify for a tax credit of up to 50% of the first $1,000 you contribute. And that's a $500 right off your income, a 50% tax credit. That's a very good deal, but your income has to be low enough to qualify. Typically it's about $100,000 or less. If your income is higher, you can deduct up to $3,000 as a deduction on your Minnesota income. So it's not a credit, not as favorable, but you can get a deduction, and it doesn't have to go into an account that you set up in Minnesota. Every state has their own complex tax laws and so forth, and many states don't allow this generous tax break like Minnesota. Usually you can only get a deduction for children that are your actual children. They might have to be that state's plan only that they have. It might have to be an account that you set up. In Minnesota, it can be an account that your relatives have already set up for those kids, and you can contribute to that account. You don't have to set up your own. Those kids don't have to be in the same state. They don't have to be your dependent. So it's very, very flexible in terms of the tax benefits that Minnesotans have for putting money into 529 plans for people they might like to help out with their college education planning. And like we talked about in an earlier caller, maybe Roth IRAs down the road. Okay?
Yeah, I love that Bert called and asked this question because it's very confusing to people that they feel like if they reside in Minnesota that they have to invest in the Minnesota plan. And at one point, I feel like, Ryan, longer ago, it was that way. But there's so much more flexibility today, as you mentioned, all the different terms and things that you can do. But I think bottom line is you need to call your financial advisor or, you know, make sure that you're getting help, because there is some complexity to trying to get the most benefit for yourself and for the person that you want to give a gift for education, just to research that. Denny?
Let's get back to the text messages. Could you give me any options for RMD dollars to be as tax smart as possible?
I love that. Ryan, do you want to start?
Yeah. I think there's so many ideas that come to mind. RMDs, one of the most common and most beneficial things that people can do to save tax dollars on their RMDs or required minimum distributions is do something called a qualified charitable distribution. And what this is you're able to take funds from a traditional IRA, but not a 401k or a 403b. It has to be a traditional IRA, a SEP IRA, or a simple IRA, and you can have money payable directly to the charity. And if it's paid direct to the charity, that is a qualified charitable distribution, and you get to exclude that distribution from your taxes. The bigger bonus is that you get to reduce how much of your RMD that you have to take out and pay taxes on. So if my required distribution is $25,000 and I decide that I wanted $5,000 of that to go towards different charities, and I send the check directly to charity, that I only have to take out $20,000, the difference between the $25,000 R&D and the $5,000 I had sent to charity, and pay taxes on the $20,000 instead of the $25,000. Now, I have to make sure to let my accountant know, or make sure when I'm doing my taxes, I have to report this and make a special adjustment on my tax return to note that I actually did this, because it doesn't say anything on the 1099 form that I get from my IRA company that money went to charity. There is a new reporting, some reporting laws that are coming into play that might help this a little bit, but as of now, there's nothing on your tax forms that says that you did it. And if you just go off the tax forms, you might end up preparing your taxes wrong and paying taxes on a distribution that went to charity and you shouldn't be paying taxes on. Ted?
Yeah, I love that you went with a charitable distribution that you can do through your IRA. It's $108,000 per person is how much you can put in per year. But what a great, number one, you need to be philanthropic, right? Most people are, well, we're from Minnesota, right? They're just very giving people, not saying that other states aren't, but we mostly worked with Minnesota people headquartered in, Minneapolis there. And now we have offices from California to New York City. So we've expanded quite a bit. But in Minnesota, where this radio show resides, you can do $108,000. The plan that I think about is with this charitable giving, provided that you want to give, is like a one big time event where you sold a stock. Maybe you had Apple and you bought it for a dollar and now it's worth gazillions, or lots more money. On those types of years where you might have something really substantial to think about the charitable giving. What I personally do is I looked at, when can I start giving from my IRA? I won't divulge my age, but I counted how many years and before that time, and I love to give to charity, so I added money to what's called a donor-advised fund. And what I can do is put a lot of money inside a donor-advised fund in one particular tax year and take that deduction, and I counted out how much I give per year until I'm the RMD age. Now, the RMD age has changed. It's 73 now, but what they did is they left this qualified charitable distribution at 70 and a half years old. So you can take out money from your IRA. You won't get quite as much bang for your buck because you aren't mandated to take any money out of your IRA at that time. But you can see where that would maybe be tax smart. Denny?
Looking at all the text messages we're getting, we'll see how many we can answer before we run out of time. Here's another one. I've been doing, texter says, Roth conversions for the last 5 years, have a pension, taking Social Security, retired at 63. I use my Social Security to pay my taxes on conversions instead of taking tax money owed out of my 403B, depleting my 403B faster. Is this a good idea? Texter says maintaining my tax bracket of 22%.
Brian?
There's a lot to unpack there, but I think what the texter is saying is they're not having taxes withheld from their tax-deferred 403B account when they convert to a Roth IRA, so that every dollar they're converting goes to Roth IRA into the account. Because if they withhold taxes on the converted amount, texter said 22%. If I have a $10,000 Roth conversion from the 403B and I withhold 22% or $2,200, that means only $7,800 is going into the Roth IRA, which means less is in the Roth IRA that can grow tax-free. If I don't withhold taxes from that Roth conversion, all $10,000 gets into the Roth. That's a much better position. Now, that doesn't make the tax go away. So what the texter is doing is having more taxes taken out of their Social Security to help pay that. And that's a fine way of doing it. You can do it through Social Security or a pension or another income source. You can make estimated tax payments. You can withhold from the Roth conversion, and as long as you take other cash and you replace the tax withholding within 60 days by writing a check to the Roth, that helps get that money into the Roth IRA. But the texter is doing the exact right thing by making sure 100% of their conversion is going into a Roth IRA. And I think that's how all people should really approach Roth IRA conversions, to make sure they get the most bang for their buck. Ted?
I would too. What I want to say is I have never, ever, ever had a client pay out of their IRA to do this conversion. It's just not the best idea. And so I really encourage people to not take the tax money out of their IRA and go find it somewhere else. And a lot of times they have the wherewithal to do that, and they agree with me. Denny?
I think we have time for one more. Texter says, I made a backdoor Roth contribution earlier this year. I want to do a backdoor Roth conversion from my work 401k via an IRA yet this fall. My advisor said I must be sure my IRA is at $0 on 12/31 to avoid any unintended tax consequences. Would you please explain why?
Gotcha. So there are very complicated rules when it comes to backdoor Roth IRA conversions. And to give some context into what a backdoor Roth IRA conversion is, it's where your income is too high to make a normal Roth IRA contribution. So when you're married, it's about $230,000, single about half that. You can instead make a contribution to an IRA and make it a non-deductible contribution. And then you can then convert the IRA to the Roth IRA without any taxes. And that's how you get money into the Roth IRA, because all you're converting is the non-deductible contribution amount. Now, this texter's advisor is giving very smart advice to make sure that this texter's IRA balance is at zero at the end of the year, because there's this thing called the pro rata rule, where if I have an IRA balance at the end of a calendar year, I need to take that into consideration in what is taxable when I convert the non-deductible IRA contribution over to the Roth IRA, because the IRS treats all of my IRAs, if I have three IRAs, if I have 10 IRAs, as all being one. And so I can't just say I'm converting this non-deductible contribution. They make me take a pro rata amount of my non-deductible contributions relative to my entire IRA balances valued at December 31st. So if I have a $1 million IRA balance at the end of the year and I do a Roth backdoor Roth conversion of $8,000, now I have to pay tax on about 99% of that Roth conversion of $8,000, because 8,000 divided by $1 million is a very small part of non-deductible contributions relative to my entire account balance. But if I leave my balance in my 401k, that doesn't get into the mix into this pro rata calculation and murky the waters. Okay?
Well, I just want to thank you, Ryan. We're running out of time here for coming and helping me on an open line show. Many of the listeners know that we do this open line show monthly, and I end up answering a lot of the questions with Bruce. And so this was kind of a day off for me because you are just so educated and experienced and a CPA and a certified financial planner. Love having you on our round table. Thank you, Ryan. Denny?
Yes, indeed. Thank you both, Peg and Ryan. And if you have any questions, you can always call 24/7 888-6-ADVICE. You can always send an email to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Hope you join us next week for more of Your Money.